More on CFAX 1070.
Federal government today is introducing legislation to further protect Canadian families from ending the practice of automatic early release for repeat violent offenders. A prime minister made the announcement today following a roundtable discussion with victims of crime held in Victoriaville, Quebec. That's interesting in itself. He was joined by Steve Blaney, Minister of Public Safety, Emergency Preparedness, Denis Lebel, Minister of Infrastructure, Communities Intergovernmental Affairs Minister, and the Economic Development Agency as well of Canada, and for the regions of Quebec, Senator Pierre Boisvenu and Hélène Ray, the Mayor of Victoriaville. Government's determined that it is a wrong approach when it comes to violent offenders, when it comes to repeat violent offenders particularly. Therefore, under the proposed legislation, repeat violent offenders will no longer be granted statutory release after serving two-thirds of their sentence. Now, these measures reflect the Government of Canada's ongoing commitment, they say, to keep our streets and our communities safe while ensuring that the rights of victims are placed over those of criminals. Now, I have no problem with that. I don't think criminals should get a break like that at all. I think criminals have got to pay the price for their crime, and I certainly believe that victims have got to have far greater rights. However, it does pose some problems. Some of the quick facts are that statutory release is a presumptive release by law at the two-thirds mark of a fixed sentence and takes the effect automatically unless the Parole Board of Canada determines that the offender is likely to commit another serious offense. And, of course, we have something on the radar that has just happened here over the last while as well, and that is the escape from one of our prison systems here on the island from a person who was in jail because of a fire in Calgary and the death of two children in that fire as well. And that person has been a reoffender on a few occasions. However, there are other instances as well. But what does it mean in the total picture instead of isolating it down to a couple of smaller issues? So we've asked Mike Mulligan. Mr. Mulligan is a criminal lawyer. He's with Mulligan Tam Pearson Law Corporation. He's joined us in the studio, and he doesn't think this is such a really good idea because the question is, will it really be effective? Good to see you again, Mike. Thank you for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So give me your take on what's happened here.
Well, what's happened here is we have an election year.
Yep.
When you read the fine print of the proposed change, the proposed change amounts to almost nothing. The proposed change, in the particulars of it, it would only affect people who had previously been sentenced to more than 5 years for a serious violent or for a violent offense, and were then serving a second separate sentence of more than 2 years. So that group of people is going to be a handful. So it's not going to have in itself much effect on too many people. The other things which are important to remember is that no offender has the right to be released after serving two-thirds of their sentence. If the National Parole Board is of the view that the person's dangerous and ought not to be released, they already have the power to what's commonly called gating somebody and requiring them to serve all of their sentence before being released. It's on an individual basis, their assessment of the person's danger. And already, judges have the authority under the criminal code, if they're of the view that somebody's needs to serve more than the ordinary portion of their sentence before being considered for parole, to extend that period. So what they've done here is largely a political gesture in an election year.
But it's interesting also that they made the announcement in Victoriaville, Quebec, because there's some issues there that they want to deal with.
That is interesting. One of the things which apparently has occurred over the past few weeks is that the current federal government's been getting a bit of a bump in the polls and the suggestion in Quebec. And the suggestion is that some of their messaging like this, and really that's what this amounts to is messaging, not any real change that's going to make anyone safer in any way. But their messaging has resonated. One of the theories is that the Charlie Hebdo, the shooting from Paris, resonated in Quebec strongly.
Dramatically,
So when the government issues press releases like this one, the view is that that may be an attempt to instill some fear and support for a position that's designed to appear like it's tough on crime.
Let me isolate one of the issues in these what they call quick facts. The changes complement other tough-on-crime actions introduced by the government, including tougher prison sentences for sexual offenses against children, serious gun crimes, impaired driving, and selling drugs to children. I mean, nobody can argue with that. I mean, we want to be tough on that. But you're saying that basically that this is overkill, that there is a judgment involved in here, sending an individual to jail for these crimes, and then it's up to the parole boards to look at this and scrutinize it far better than they've been doing in the past, or what?
Well, the way it works is this. If a judge sentences somebody to a period of jail of less than 2 years,
yes,
the judge at the time of sentencing can then also choose to impose a period of probation. So you'd have the person serve their sentence and then not just be released straight into the community, but go on to probation. So they're supervised, monitored, reporting, this sort of thing. On the other hand, when a judge imposes a sentence of more than 2 years, a judge doesn't at that time assign a period of probation. A judge would simply sentence the person to a longer period of time, let's say 10 years, and then it would be up to the parole authorities to determine whether the person should be released earlier. That's the idea.
Give me a take on Michael Douglas Sheets serving 15-year sentence at a federal prison here in B.C. Escaped. We caught Mr. Sheets yesterday, apparently at about 10:30 last night. He was in there for manslaughter and arson in connection with the 2004 incident in which the former crack addict was involved in throwing a rock and a Molotov cocktail into a home in Calgary where a 5-year-old and a 4-year-old sisters were burned beyond recognition. They say this is not the first time that he'd been allowed out into the community. After his release in May 2013, Sheets had his day parole suspended 3 times for violations before he was sent back to prison. How many times does a person have to misbehave when they're out on a day pass before somebody turns around and said, hey, this guy's not ready to go back into the community. He hasn't learned his lesson yet.
Usually once. But the important thing there is that it's an exercise of discretion. A parole officer or the National Parole Board would have to ask themselves, what is the screw-up? Were they 20 minutes late for their reporting?
Yes.
Or, on the other hand, did they commit some other offense when they were released? And they're going to get completely different responses. But the parole officers and the National Parole Board are expert in assessing whether somebody's likely to be a danger if they're released. Mm-hmm. They have the power to set the conditions that somebody would be released upon. And indeed, they could decide not to release the person at all until their sentence is done. All of that exists. So the important things, in my judgment, are to permit appropriate discretion for bodies like the National Parole Board and judges to impose the appropriate sentence, taking into account the particular circumstances of an offender. Mm-hmm. The other thing we need to remember is this, which is the underlying reason we have parole. Most people who are sentenced, whatever the length of their sentence is going to be, they're eventually going to be released. And what you don't want is you do not want the person who served every day of their 10-year sentence, having never been released on parole, having no skills in the community, never having been supervised and monitored, released and moving in next door to you. You don't want that. What you want, if you wish to be safe and free from crime, is you want a system which carefully and individually assesses the danger that somebody poses. If they're viewed to be not a risk to offend, release them in a way which is monitored, supervised, have them in a halfway house, put conditions on their release, make sure that they're abiding by them, and release the person gradually. That's how you do it if you don't want to be the victim of crime.
We'll be back with you after we take a break here for the news headlines and continue with Michael Mulligan, a criminal lawyer, Mulligan at Tam Pearson Law Corporation. Prime Minister Stephen Harper announced further steps to protect Canadian families from repeat violent offenders. Do you agree with what you're hearing? Do you think it should have been done, or do you believe that it's just too punitive? Right after this. Let's see what's going on in the news, and here is John Spur.
Thanks, Terry. Here are some stories from the CFAX newsroom. The BC Review Board is hearing submissions on supervised outings for Alan Schoenborn, who's in custody at a psychiatric hospital for killing his 3 kids in Merritt. A psychiatrist says that 8 years after the deaths, there are risks in granting releases for Schoenborn, who was declared not criminally responsible because of a mental disorder. The Brentwood Mill Bay Ferry will be out of service for about 8 weeks from mid-April to mid-June. The Ferry Corp says that the MV Kitsa is due for major refit work that is required once every 4 years. Prime Minister Stephen Harper says that considering Russian President Vladimir Putin has systematically violated every agreement he has made to end the aggression against Ukraine, he is skeptical about the ceasefire reached in Belarus between Russia and Ukraine. But he says the agreement, which is scheduled to begin Saturday at midnight, is encouraging. CFAX traffic weather. Only one traffic note at this point. That's just that the Johnson Street Bridge will be a little bit slow moving in that area due to the pouring of concrete for the new bridge. So maybe avoid that area if you can. Should be mostly cloudy for the rest of the afternoon into the early evening. There are some slight showers happening right now. Overnight showers, low of 7, and then tomorrow cloudy. A few showers in the morning, but should clear up a bit in the afternoon, reaching a high of 12 degrees. You can find out more at CFAX1070.com.
Call us 250-386-1161 or on your cell at Star 1070. It's The Drive with Terry Moore on CFAX 1070.
Drive with Terry Moore is brought to you by Fairway Markets. No club cards, no points, no gimmicks. Just great card-free pricing.
All season, CFAX 1070 is giving away trips to see the Canucks play live with the Lucky Canuck. Here's how.
Listen for the CFAX Lucky Canuck during each game. Then go to CFAX1070.com and enter that player's name. You could win tickets to an upcoming game, accommodations at the Rosedale on Robson, and fly round trip with Harbor Air Seaplanes. Plus, you have a chance to win a $50 gift card instantly from Glenwood Meats.
Win with the Lucky Canuck from Glenwood Meats, Harbor Air Seaplanes, and CFAX 1070.
Hi, I'm Randy Hanatko, founder of Train West Management and Consulting. At the point of your presentation, you need to be totally in charge and focused on the specific solutions for the prospect's issues. This is the time to be the expert, but only on what has been discussed. When a sales presentation is finally made, a lot of effort has been expended to fully understand the prospect's pain, not only at the surface level, but also the business reasons for the purchase and how it will affect them and their staff personally. The presentation cannot include your suggestions about things that haven't been discussed. For years, we've been providing ongoing sales and management coaching and training, helping professionals who are 100% committed to long-term sales growth and profitability no matter what it takes. If you're deadly serious about increasing your sales and profits, find out how we can make you better. Call us at Train West Management and Consulting, the official sales training firm of the Vancouver Canucks, at 250-382-1272. That's 250-382-1272. Or log on to our website at trainwest.ca.
This is Tom Williams, owner of Aerial Roofing. You may be thinking to yourself,
I sure hope my roof holds up this winter.
And you may be wondering,
did I wait too long to find out?
With Aerial Roofing, that's something you'll never have to worry about. Don't let the weather be a factor. We work all year round. We'll come look at your roof and let you know if it needs replacing. Sometimes you don't need a new roof. And if that's the case, we'll tell you. Aerial Roofing. We're honest about roofing.
For a free estimate, get in touch at aerialroofing.ca.
Tonight at 6 on CTV News.
An inmate who escaped during a day trip to Victoria is back behind bars. We'll have more on how the man convicted of torching a house and killing two kids was captured. How much local produce will be on the shelves when Whole Foods comes to Saanich? We'll talk to island farmers. And the buzz on all these bees, why they've arrived on the island a month early.
If it's happening on Vancouver Island, it's on CTV News weeknights at 5 and 6 on Channel 12. Now, the Canuck Report with John Shorthouse.
The head coach probably could have done without the extra stress on his 58th birthday, but all's well that ends well, I suppose. And in a way, the ending in Chicago was actually a perfect scenario for Willie Desjardins. Not the fact his team coughed up a late two-goal lead and gifted a single point to a conference rival, but the way it went down wasn't really a bad thing, not in the spirit of avoiding yet another West Coast goaltending controversy. Eddie Lack gets the win in one of his rare starts. He's very good for the most part, but the last goal by Marian Hossa's just stinky enough that the Canucks can turn the net back to Ryan Miller tomorrow night against Boston, no questions asked. Lack's going to get another start this weekend anyway. It is a back-to-back with the Canucks traveling postgame to Calgary for a Saturday date with the Flames. But the way things unfolded last night, that's the exact scenario the team can stick to. No need to alter the plan and open up a familiar can of worms. With the Canucks, this is John Shorthouse in Vancouver.
That was the Canuck Report. Talking you through your commute, it's The Drive with Terry Moore on CFAX 1070.
Prime Minister Stephen Harper announced further steps to protect Canadian families from repeat violent offenders, but not everybody is happy with the way that it's structured. In the studio with me right now is Michael Mulligan. He's a criminal lawyer, Mulligan Natan Pearson Law Corporation. Essentially, what you're saying is that we have a large bundle of people who are serving sentences over here for violent offenses and so on, in most cases within the system. They're going through some degree of rehabilitation. They've got, and the judge has said, okay, based upon the crime, well, somebody, I may give somebody 2 years, but in your case, we're going to give you 5 years because of the nature of how you perpetrated this crime. And so they're going, and the system is trying to do its due diligence to get this person effective enough to be released at some point or other, because you can't keep everybody for the rest of their lives. So they do that, but then a couple of bad apples get into this barrel, and they get all the headlines, such as the Sheets issue here with the escape and so on. But here's the other side of this. And you've alluded to it in talking about the whole justice system and talking about the court systems and the people who make the decision to let some of these people out early. So when they get before a parole board, we know of instances, and you know of them as well, and they are sensational instances where people have been released on parole and they have perpetrated some very violent crimes. Are the parole boards really doing their due diligence to make sure that we are protected, or is the system faulty?
No system is perfect, and nobody's going to be able to make perfect predictions as to how people are going to behave in the future. But you're quite right. Virtually everyone who's in custody will at some point be released, unless we're planning to jail everyone for the rest of their life at enormous public expense. People are going to get out. And the key is to provide discretion and flexibility to the system. And generally, that's how it works. Some of that's gone away with things like mandatory minimum sentences, where you have unexpected and, in some cases, unjust results of people being sentenced for longer than they need to be. But once somebody's sentenced in the federal system, where that person winds up and when they're going to get out is a function largely of their background, behavior in custody, and an assessment of their risk. Usually somebody who's sentenced to more than 2 years is going to go to a maximum security prison. They'll be assessed. And then where they'll wind up, do they wind up in a medium security or eventually by good behavior work their way to a minimum one, and then eventually if they behave well, release, is an exercise of discretion and judgment. And that's really the key to a system that's going to work. It's never going to be perfect, but a system like we have that affords that discretion is going to have much better results than simply keeping everyone until the last day of their sentence and then dropping them into the community with no supervision. If we do that, it's a recipe for disaster.
What do you think of the U.S. system in California particularly? Three strikes, you're out.
That's been a failure there.
Total failure.
It's resulted in an overwhelming number of people in custody, often for things like nonviolent drug offenses.
Yeah. Stealing a pizza.
Stealing a pizza for the third time. The state is virtually bankrupt. They've had such extreme prison overcrowding that they've had judicial orders that thousands of prisoners just be released because there are so many of them in there for lifetime sentences for, in some cases, nonviolent third offenses.
Yeah, that they just can't bear the expense. Audience. You can get a lifetime sentence in the U.S. without committing murder.
That's correct. In a number of states, they have these laws called three-strike laws, with the idea being that if you commit a third felony, you can then wind up with a life sentence. So you wind up with these bizarre results where you've got people serving life sentences for things like nonviolent drug offenses. So you just fill the prisons with people. And what happens is this, right? The three strikes, it was a good, I'm sure it was a press release similar to the one we're sitting in front of now. Yep. It sounded great at the time.
Great intention. Looks good on paper.
Looks great on paper. But here's the thing. We have limited resources. Prison and prison spaces, the correctional officers aren't unlimited. We only have so much money we're prepared to spend on these things. And each time, by some mandatory rule, like the one proposed here, you wind up putting somebody in jail that doesn't need to be there. They're not violent. Somebody who's, for example, a marijuana grower now gets a mandatory minimum jail sentence. Each person we put in jail for things like that is one more person that the correctional people have to spend time dealing with. So rather than monitoring and incarcerating and supervising the violent sex offender, we take our limited resources and we dedicate them to things like jailing pot growers. And it sounded really tough at the time, but in terms of public safety, it's a disaster.
The federal government have also discussed building bigger jails, making the whole question of confinement a much larger issue than it is today. Is that essentially correct?
Yes, and what's happened is that the current federal government has introduced a whole series of what are called mandatory minimum sentences. And what that means is that a person convicted of a particular offense, for example, growing more than 6 pot plants, is now subject to a mandatory jail sentence. No matter what their background, circumstances, or what the judge thinks of it, the judge must sentence that person to a mandatory minimum period of jail. So we're filling up our prisons with people who, in the opinion or judgment of the judge, would be, this person doesn't need to go to jail. They have no record, and they grew 6 pot plants in their basement closet. But they were convicted. There's a list of what must happen. That's a mandatory minimum sentence. So off they go to prison at enormous public expense. And not only is it expensive, unjust, and wasteful, but it makes all of us, it puts all of us at risk, because our system can't then focus on the people that are genuinely dangerous. Where we should put our resources.
Here in BC, you can drive across the border and go and buy it down in Seattle.
That's right.
Or wherever you want. All right. Andrew, are you there?
Yes, I am. I'd just like to support your guest, because I totally agree with what he's saying. Unfortunately, our prime minister is like a cuckoo bird. He keeps bringing things up like this at election times and using it for an emotional thing. And yet situations like we had 47 people killed in a very bad accident with railways, but he hasn't enforced anything to make the railways make sure that kind of thing doesn't happen again. It's quite outrageous that it's an emotional issue, and it's really, you know, an election thing, and I think it's quite disgraceful.
All right, appreciate your input. Thank you for the call. Let me get one more call before we have to wrap on this one. Steve, go ahead.
Hi, yeah. Actually, I'm against your guest. You know, we're not, as far as I can tell, they're not talking about anything like the U.S. three-strike law where, you know, you shoplift something, you're going to jail. You know, for the most part, I totally support the tough-on-crime that Prime Minister and everyone's doing.
Have you read the report?
I've only had a chance to glance at it.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've been at work, but you know what? I'm sorry.
I'm not sorry you're at work. I'm glad you're working. Good for you.
The judges have been, you know, they were giving slap on the wrist for crimes that the majority of people in Canada think they should do time in jail for.
All right, that's a percent. It's an interesting comment. I've got to let you go because I'm just about out of time here, but thank you for that call. He says that that the legal system today just gives people a slap on the wrist where they should get a lot more time.
Well, that's not my experience in the system. If a particular judge imposed a sentence which for some reason was inappropriate, we have a remedy for that. The remedy for that is an appeal. So we don't have an epidemic of people being sentenced inappropriately, but we do now have an epidemic of people being sentenced to prison for things which that's not necessary or a good use of resources. That's what we have.
Where do you see this going?
Well, it'll probably turn on the next election. This is another sort of attempt to instill fear in people in an effort to gather votes. If they're successful in their efforts, I'm sure we'll see more of these press releases next year.
Good to see you. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you.
To Michael Mulligan, a criminal lawyer, Mulligan Tam Pearson Law Corporation, and talking about the release.